Yeah.
Wow.
What's going on? Bar Down Breakdown is back. You know, it's funny. I get to say that every time. It's like I don't actually believe that we get to do this again, but we get to do it every Tuesday, which is awesome. And we are totally blessed to have our homie Joe Acuity with us. Joe is part of the very awesome Ice Nine Kills. I'm sure if you've been on YouTube at some point in your life, you've seen one of like the 800 videos they've put out on this record cycle. But when this episode comes out, the Silver Scream 2 will actually be out on Fearless Records. It actually comes out as we're recording this in 2 days on the 15th. But when this episode comes out, it'll already be out and available for everyone. So go make sure that you pre-order that bad boy. You only got like couple days left to do it, but by the time this episode comes out, you'll already have missed the boat on pre-ordering it. But go buy it, go download it, go save it, listen to it wherever you like to listen to your music. But Joe, thanks for being with us, man. What's going on?
It's good to be back after what we were just talking about, 2 years. So thank you guys for having me, and thank you for the kind words.
But yeah, yeah, man,
what were you saying? Was it episode 11?
11.
11.
Dude, yeah, it's wild.
That was before my time. That was when our homie was holding it down, who's now who's now Yes Men Outfittering Everything, which, by the way, like I just bought 2 shirts from Yes Men, and they just came in the mail. I got the Pesky Pazur shirt and the Sizikas like Ride Till We Die shirt. So totally love it, man. Shout out to Yes Men and Devin. Love you, buddy. But hey, let's kind of flip the script. We usually just jump right into music stuff, but as we are recording this episode, we are on day 2 of the NHL season. Now, you know, bunch to talk about, but let's just kind of jump right in. So did you get an opportunity to watch the first ever Seattle Kraken NHL game?
You know, I didn't get to watch the whole game. I caught highlights. I was excited to see Donato get that first goal, just because he was a Bruin to start, and I was a fan of that kid, and like, you know, it was just cool to see, you know, the young dude get the first goal. Very cool. But yeah,
I'm excited to watch
the new season. I got you didn't watch any of it,
dude. That's I'm lucky my I'm lucky that my wife lets me watch Islander games. So like, if I'm like, oh, I want to watch a Seattle Kraken Vegas Golden Knights game, she's gonna be like, yeah, and we're getting divorced.
No, she's way nicer than that. I don't think that. But then again, I mean, that game was on at what, 10:30 Eastern Standard. So I mean, yeah, that would have been a late one to stay up for. But
Year's going to be a challenge. I mean, now that they have this, the ESPN thing is so much more affordable. So like, I'm going to be glued to the TV the whole season now.
Oh yeah, like how can't you? Right. And I mean, you know, it was one of those games where like I caught bits and pieces and watched some highlights. And I mean, you know, it really wasn't competitive until like kind of the last vestiges of the game where, you know, Seattle ended up trying to come back. I think it was 4-3. Seattle ended up, you know, scoring a couple of goals, which is super cool. But, you know, it's growing pains, right? I mean, like, you know, they're a brand new franchise. They're all trying to get their act together. They're all trying to see how they gel on the ice. And, you know, who knows if they're going to have the Vegas, the Vegas glitz and glamour, and who knows if they're going to, you know, run deep. But it is so great to have some hockey back. And to be honest, I was a little, I don't know, I guess, what's the best word for it? I guess I was a little concerned about how ESPN was going to present it, because I really thought they made the draft so like kitschy and, like I wasn't super into it, man.
This past year, the playoffs were just crushing for me.
Year. Why were they crushing to
thanks
you?
Thanks to you guys.
So, I got to tell you, you know, I get it, man. It's but brand new season, brand new day. You know, essentially we got 82 games to play, and we're all 0-0. Except for
your boy Eberle with the Kraken now?
You know,
hey, already missing wide open in the slot, hitting the post, right back at his old ways,
doing Jordan stuff, man. But I'm
he's amazing.
I'm very excited though for for the Island. Honestly, man, I'm just super excited for that whole division. I think that is going to be a very competitive division. I really do.
It's crazy. I mean, that whole, honestly, the Eastern Conference, and like picking the top five teams there is so difficult. It could be in any order, right? It's going to be awesome. It's going to be such a great season.
Yep. It absolutely is. And I know a lot of hockey experts, like on Twitter and all over the place, were kind of, you know, I saw some people putting out predictions as to what they think's going to happen. And I've seen a couple of people predicting the Islanders to come out of the East, but two different predictions I've seen have had the Islanders coming out of the East only to be bested by the Avs in the Stanley Cup, which, you know, that team, man, whew,
I know
they're a hell of a team. So I could definitely see it happening. But
I could too, for sure.
God, that'd be crushing. That would just be like every year we get a little bit better.
You guys deserve it at this point. Like, you know.
Look,
is it? The past 2 years in the finals,
in the Eastern Conference final,
And right, the Bolts, man, the Bolts are a great team, but they've lost some you know real linchpins of their team. You know, Yanni Gourde is gone. I can't think of his name. Went to the Rangers,
pretty much the whole.
But they're
line
just
is,
dude. I mean, how do you? It's so hard to not say that they could three-peat. You know, like it's totally possible with Vasilevsky, and like they just have such a great core with those guys. Like you can never count them out.
Yeah, you know, it's a good hockey day for your squad when you're getting a couple past Vasilevsky. Like, doesn't happen very often, man. He's a one of a kind goalie. He really is.
He's incredible.
So
hey, we're not here to talk about Tampa Bay. We're here to talk about the
Bruins. Dude, I could go on forever about all these teams now. I've been like locked into research mode, like gearing up for the season opener. So I'm like,
sure.
I'm ready to go.
but let's just Bruins. Really dive into the Bruins a little bit, because
let's do it.
Dude, losing Krejci, like, how are you feeling about that?
Dude, he's like my guy, you know, like he's Mr. Playoffs in Boston.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it sucks. I get it. I mean, people are saying he might come back after that season is done over there. I don't see it happening, but you know, I don't think the Bruins are as good of a team as we were last year, but it wouldn't surprise me if we perform just as well, if not better. There is like so many variables involved. Like, I could see Swayman doing great things in net, you know. I don't know how soon Rask will be back and if he'll have that job as firmly as he did before. I can't like necessarily call that prediction, so don't like quote me on it, but there's just so many like younger guys and like, you know, I don't know if the lines will probably change a shitload. Who knows, you know? So I'm optimistic. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'd say it that way.
So in anticipation of, you know, you coming on knowing that you're a Bees fan, I was like looking some stuff up and I found this really interesting stat, which I think, so as far as the, not your forwards, but your D-men, there it's comprised, with the exception of Zboril, all Americans. I think that's like the only squad on the NHL. It's all Americans. It's
They were talking about that last year during the playoffs. And you know what's funny is I remember, that's changed a lot for that team, because at one point I think in the last decade there was no Americans on the team, and I think we were one of the only teams, if not the only team, that didn't have anyone. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's interesting.
It is. I think that's just like a little, an interesting tidbit. But I mean, the Bruins are always one of those teams. I mean, you have such a dynamic player in Taylor Hall. And then, of course, you've got Pasta and Marchand, who just are, you know, as soon as, you know, with the exception of, you know, the last couple of years. But I mean, as soon as they get going in the playoffs, man, they're normally like, you know, I mean, they don't call them the perfection line for, you know, for nothing. I mean, like they're.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious from your guys' perspective, because, you know, around here, no one questions the idea that they're the best line in the NHL. How do you guys feel about that?
I felt like you guys, you live and die by them, though. at this point.
100%. You're right. You're totally right. I mean, it's always been depth, especially that third. I mean, last year it was the third line center. This year, I mean, it's even more of a problem, like right down the middle. So outside that first line, everything can change, I think. But you're right. I think we do live and die by that first line for sure.
And you know, they talk about damn good. They are. And I mean,
it's fun to watch them.
Sure are. And they talk about, you know, like identity lines, you know, the Islanders' identity line is their fourth line and all that kind of stuff. But I guess the, you know, the kind of the wild thing to talk about is, you know, Pasta's still young, and I'm sure, you know, you guys are going to, you know, he's going to be a Bruin for life. And, you know, Marchand's getting up there, but, you know, Bergeron, I think, is like 37 or something, man. So, I mean, like his,
what is he like, his 34 or 5 now, I think.
Okay, so yeah, maybe I'm overshooting it, but even at that, man, you know, his days as a dynamic player are probably
actually you're
coming
you're
to an
closer.
End.
He's 36.
He's 36. Okay, so so what, like as a Bees fan, like what, you know, what's the thought here? Like, you know, once he inevitably hangs him up, like what do the Bees do? Do they try to develop someone, you know, in their farm, or do they go out and get a superstar because he's your center, right? So do you go out and fill that role with a superstar? Like what happens, you know?
You know, I kind of I've thought about this in a few different directions, I guess. First off, I'll just say that everyone has been saying that Bergeron is going to get worse year over year, and he just hasn't. It's kind of crazy. Like starting to when he was like 30 years old, he hasn't really declined, and obviously it's going to happen. Like it's inevitable. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I have no idea when at this point, because I definitely thought it was going to happen earlier. But yeah, you're right. I mean, looking back, we've had this like core group of guys for the last decade, mm-hmm. and one by one, right, they're just dropping off. Right. And it's really kind of Marchand and Bergeron are the guys left. And you're right. Everyone's kind of aged out. I kind of think the good thing about Boston is everyone takes team friendly deals.
Yeah.
So it would not be unheard of, I think, to go after some, you know, up and coming star or trade for some high round draft picks in the future. I can't help but feel like this is one of the last years that this team is going to like, not necessarily fall off completely, but you know, I do think in the next few years, they're going to be fighting to get into the playoffs rather than be one of those top teams, which, you know, that kind of stuff kind of excites me too, because I like watching teams rebuild and see the direction that they go in, you know?
Yeah,
so I'm not totally upset about it. It's been like a really fun, I can't call it a dynasty because they only won once, but you know, they had such a dominant period. And I, you know, it could continue for the next couple of years. Who knows the way that they play.
When the rebuild goes on for 15 years, I'm going to show you this video and be like, you wished it. You wanted that rebuild, because Tom and I have lived through a team that has basically rebuilt our entire life. So
I know.
So don't wish that on yourself.
This is me tricking myself to just being into it all the time. Okay.
Yes. The optimism. It's the optimism. You have to, you have no choice. You know, and while we lived all those rebuilds, I mean, you know, the real heartbreaking thing is the Islanders would do these things where like, they'd go out and they'd get these, like, you know, again, not to beat a horse with using this, you know, beat a dead horse with using this word, but dynamic players. I mean, they would get these guys who you'd be like, ooh, like, you know, like,
or you would draft people like
that's a great pickup,
Chara,
or yeah, right,
trade them away for you know, someone that didn't even want to be on the team and played a couple of years wearing a turtleneck.
sure was, but it's like, you know, the NHL is a very, very interesting organization in so much that like you really can have a rebuild that'll take you 10 years.
Yeah.
Or have a rebuild that like just happens to be a year or two, and all of a sudden you're cranking it out. Like, you know, obviously the Detroit Red Wings are kind of going through that right now, right? Like they've been probably be in rebuild mode for what, maybe 5 or 6 years at this point, maybe even longer. But you know, I'm 34 and I you know, growing up, man, like the Red Wings were like the hockey team. Right. I mean, like,
yeah,
I remember throwing like NHL 95 on like Sega Genesis and just being like, don't care that I'm an Islander fan. Unbeatable. I'm going to be the Red Wings so I can play as, you know, Yzerman and Fedorov and Shanahan and Chelios when he joined the team. And it was just like, you couldn't imagine like a better team. But the interesting thing about the 90s though, was the 90s, you know, NHL was really diverse. Like you would think that the Red Wings with the kind of team they were, they would have won 5-6 cups. But I mean, I think they won two, if I'm not mistaken, in the 90s, I think. But
I think you're right.
Or three.
Two or three. The rest of the teams.
But that's
makes
it so different than other sports, right? Like that, right? Like it's just hard to repeat. Yep. It's just the nature of the sport. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, it really is.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously you have your superstars, right? But just the nature of the game is you can only rely on that stuff or those players so much.
Exactly.
Which is why I really love it. But
with such a small cap, like if one of your like superstars underperforms and you are overpaying, like look at what's going on in Florida, you know, overpaying Bobrovsky, and he's not even like the number one guy. So could you imagine where that money could have went to booster that team, and then Florida could be the best team, like the best team in
the
state of Florida.
Man, they're gonna come out on top in the East. Watch, it could happen.
Yeah, no, it could definitely happen. They're only like one or two pieces away. Yeah,
yeah.
I see them this year surprising people.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing about this
fun team.
I think they're gonna be a blast to watch, and that's the other thing about this season too. That I mean, it happens every season, but this season, you know, more than not, you're going to end up seeing, I think, a lot of these like trade deadline deals and these big like blockbusters, I think, this season, because when you've got the Bolts who are, you know, potentially about to win a third cup, I think a lot of these other teams are kind of like chomping at the bit and like clamoring for like we can't let an organization win three in a row. Like we've got to like really... Yeah. Do what we got to do to make sure that we put our best foot forward. And I think you're going to see that. And especially, like I said, in the East and in, you know, our division, which is so competitive, I think you're going to see a lot of it there. Now, you know, it remains to be seen. I mean, everyone on paper looks good, but you know, with the NHL, you never know. I mean, you know, come 4 months from now, you know, the Rangers who, you know, I've been talking about for a while and
stop talking about them,
but they're good, and they've made a lot of good investments on players, and they've made a lot of good deals. But then again, I mean, you know, 4 months from now the Rangers could be sitting 20 points behind. You just never know. Right. But having said though,
I feel bad dogging them, but how Buffalo starts every year, okay, and
I end up talking. Yeah, it's the poor Sabres, man. And it's just like, for you know, real. Every time I think of like how passionate the like sports fan base in Buffalo is, and like I think about like, you know, like Every Time I Die and like all these bands that
it
are just
sucks,
like,
man. I mean, our drummer is from Buffalo. He's a huge sports fan. And I don't even I'm like, we don't have to talk about hockey. Let's just talk about the Bills right now.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and not that we're a football podcast at all, but I mean like the Bills just put a hurting on the Kansas City Chiefs. And I mean, like they're poised to be like one of the front runners to potentially come out of the AFC. Yep. But like when you think of Buffalo, like, I mean, granted, they had the, you know, the run in the 90s with, you know, with Jim Kelly and the, you know, like getting to the four Super Bowls and Doug Flutie and all that stuff. But like, I think when I think of Buffalo, like, I think hockey, like, I just think
Dominic Hasek.
Yeah, you think of Dominic Hasek and that team that they played the Stars
Jason
that year.
Jason Pominville.
Right? Yeah, there you go. But it's like crazy to think that like the Sabres are just so bad, you know. Dude, and it
sucks for the league, honestly. Yeah, it just sucks. Like teams should not stay that bad for that long. It just doesn't work. And it's interesting because the ownership is the same as the Bills.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
So you would think they'd figure it out and like lead from the top with that stuff, but
absolutely.
Who knows?
I don't know. All the stuff that Leonard came out and said about them, and what's going on with Jack Eichel, and they're like not wanting him to get the surgery that will like basically keep him from being a cripple when he's older. Like,
dude, it's crazy.
That's craziness.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know the details, obviously, but from the outside, it just seems mind-numbingly stupid how that situation was.
It really does. And like, and you know, and it's another tough thing to look at this whole situation with Leonard. Not that I want to spend too much time agonizing over it, because it is really, really just a tough situation. But I still can't get over like all of these like NHL homers. Like, you know, Leonard is like out here, you know, talking about like this real stuff that's happening in the NHL, and people are just like, oh, he's bitter and he's just going crazy. Yeah, and like, he's just trying to make a name for himself. It's like, dude, like how could you be that off base? Like, he's just right. Like one of the only people who has the stones to come out here and be like, hey guys, these are the things we need to fix
about it. He's like intelligent. He acknowledges where he's at. Right. Mm-hmm. He can say like, I don't know what that experience is like, but you know, I've watched people go through X, Y, and Z. Like, he seems like a good, honest dude when you hear him talk, right? He doesn't seem like he's just complaining or making shit up.
No.
And you don't normally hear these horror stories about like a team's franchise player. It's like those fourth line grinders that, you know, really aren't even making that much money when it comes down to it. Like their window in the NHL is super small. Yeah, they're making like $700,000 a year at the league minimum. But when you factor in that, like, they have to live off that money basically the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
And they might have these like health issues that just cripple them the rest of their lives. Like, is it really that much money? So like, that's who he's talking about. And like Tom Sestito, who was on the Vancouver Canucks, he came out and was like, yeah, like they gave me all these like painkillers and like, I forget the drugs that he came out and said that he was prescribed by the team. And like, there's serious shit that really messes with your brain that they were just given to him so that he could go out there and fight.
Yeah. And I mean, the old
one out there.
Yeah. And the old adage with painkillers, as everybody knows, is it's the gateway to, you know, more opioids. And, you know, when you're run out of money and you can't get painkillers anymore, you just go down the street and get a $20 bag of heroin. And that's how all of this starts. And it's like, you know, people, you know, it's normal, everyday people who, and what makes it even worse is like, when you think of like a hockey player, like they're going out there and they're doing all this for A, because they love the sport, because, you know, most hockey players grew up, you know, with skates in their crib. But also further than that, they're doing this to like entertain us. And then like, essentially, you know, these owners and trainers are just letting them ruin their lives just because the more they're on the ice, you know, the more people are getting paid and stuff like this.
It's
and
a it's money just
like,
game. It's a business.
It's a vicious cycle, man. And it's, and it kind of makes you stop and think if, you know, the fans were more in tune to it and were like, hey, listen, like, you know, these guys are going out there every night, you know, not just because they love the game, but to entertain us. But if we get hip to this whole idea that, like, you know, people are like essentially like having their lives thrown away, like maybe if we as fans step back and say like, hey, unless this shit changes, like, you know, we're not tuning in, you know, you got to hit the owners where it hurts in their wallet, you know? So, you know, like,
well,
I said, I don't want to,
like, he's putting the pressure on the league, right? And I didn't see any follow up. I know the league has to sit with them, right?
But I mean, it's what you got to do. And I think it's, I think it's the right play for Robin Leonard. And even if he's, 100%. You know, he's not making a lot of friends. And maybe, you know, even in the locker room, there's some people that are like, why are you doing this, bro? You know, it's just like, it's got to be done. It's got to be done. Yeah. So, you know, kudos to Robin Leonard for
sure.
getting these out there. So one, I have one last, you know, quick hockey thing. And then we could talk a little bit about Ice Nine Kills and all the cool shit that you guys got going on. So, now, you know, do you get like, you know, I know you guys have like a really rigorous touring schedule and you're always, you know, out there, you know, being busy. And I know you're also working on, you know, music for, you know, other people and doing all studio work and all that kind of great stuff. But do you get an opportunity, like when you're out on the road, and we might have asked this a couple of years ago, but I'm just going to ask it again. When you're out on the road, are you able to like build in time to like maybe go catch your bees, like play somewhere where you haven't had the opportunity to see them? Like, oh man, you know, we're going to be in, you know, we're playing, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
The Observatory or the Chain Reaction in Anaheim. Like, let's go to a Ducks game, you know, like the Bruins are in town. Did you get that opportunity when you're out there?
You know, it's no, honestly, which sucks.
I mean, bummer.
So I've been to a couple games on the road, but it really has to line up it right. So it's tough to be in one, a city where a game is being played, to the time off to do it. Like a lot of our days off are even like promo days where we'll have like a radio interview, or, you know, we have to do some other shit, or it could just be a travel day. But I actually moved to LA during quarantine. So I'm stoked to be able to see as many teams as I can for like $30 at the Kings game. So I'm going to be there all the time. So hopefully I get to see a lot of action when I'm just home now, and that'll be my, you know, how I get to catch all the away teams and stuff.
Sweet.
Now, speaking of the Kings, did you see their new uniforms?
I haven't.
They got like the white gloves, the
vintage
Gretzky era Kings logo. It's just
pretty
it looks
sick.
Sharp.
Looks real definitely sharp. Sick.
I'm a jersey guy. It. Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's dope. Really like that.
So I do want to just ask about Big Z. You know, obviously every Bruins fan is, you know, going to live and die by Chara. Do you think he's got it in his tank still to be a bottom six defenseman for the Islanders?
Dude, I think any team would kill to have him in their bottom six. And he is admittedly frustrating to watch because he doesn't really look like he's going 100% all the time. But, like, dude, that the way that guy can just clear the front of the net is, like, insane. It's just his reach, right? And like, you know, he gives him almost an unfair advantage. And he's smart. And I don't know if you've gotten a chance to watch or if you've had – if you've watched any of, like, the Behind the Bee series, which is, like, the Bruins, you know. It's awesome. I think it's – they rank them. I think it's rated the best in the NHL. It's very similar to, like, the HBO, you know, follow the team to the Winter Classic.
Yeah, where is that available?
I think you can even just watch them on YouTube now. But
really?
That guy in the locker room is insane. Like, he is a true leader in the way he just, like, commands the room and you know, talks about other people. And even you hear like stories of players talking about how they helped him with personal shit. And, you know, he's like a real, really, really valuable player, not even on the ice, I think. So I really truly think any team is lucky to have him. And not even like, it's obviously I'm a Boston guy, but I think just watching him, I become more and more of a fan of him as the years have gone on, just as I've learned more about what he does, you know?
And if I'm not mistaken, when McAvoy was first, you know, drafted and on the Bruins, they were a defensive pairing, right?
Yeah, they started together. Yep.
So, you know, we got young Noah Dobson, who is our next up and coming defenseman. That they're saying that him and Dobson and Chara could be, at least at the start of the season, the pairing. So, you know, hopefully we get a little of that
kinda makes sense, McAvoy treatment. You need someone quick to get around and Z to just clear shit.
Yeah.
Who was the defenseman that got shipped out for you guys? I don't remember.
Nick Leddy.
Yep. Right. So what do you think? Is that an upgrade?
Honestly, Nick Leddy was, first of all, making too much money for what he was doing. And he was more of like, it was like a package deal. So when the Islanders brought in Nick Leddy, they also brought in Johnny Boychuk. And like Johnny Boychuk and Nick Leddy played really well together. They were great. Like their games compromised each other, like perfectly complemented each other. Uh-huh. Sorry. And like once Boychuk started getting hurt, and then like obviously he had that career ending injury, it was just like, ooh, like, our team isn't made right now to have this like offensive defenseman on our team.
Yeah.
So it made sense to ship him out. And I'm sure I'm sure Barry Trotz just loves having Charb. Honestly, I feel like that's his kind of player.
100%. I mean, if anything, it just fits within that system more, regardless of who's a better player or not. It seems that Chara would fit into that system much better.
Yeah, and even if you're getting a Chara who's you know older and not the spring chicken that he was, even you know getting Chara with the presence that he has at 60 or 70%, I mean that's like you know 100% for some of like those kind of like middle of the road fledgling defensemen, you know, that like just don't have their identity. Like, you know, putting Chara in front of the net, man, is just like, you know, that's some scary stuff. The dude is just enormous.
Right.
You know?
I mean, just playing against him, regardless of how fast he's moving, has got to be terrifying.
Yep.
Going up against that dude one-on-one.
And then you also got to remember, you know, He's so old, man. That guy probably smells like Ben Gay so bad that like it just any offensemen that just get into the defensive zone, they just pass out from all of the Ben Gay that they smell, you know. So I'll take it. So we're gonna flip the script. We're gonna talk a little bit of Ice Nine Kills, but before we do that, we're gonna real quick give you a little bit of information about our awesome sponsor, DraftKings. And I'm going to read you a little something about the NFL season that is in full swing and a really, really great offer with DraftKings and DraftKings Sportsbook. So we've got another week of the NFL season, and that means another shot to win big at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet just $1. That's $1 on any NFL game and win $100 in free bets. So, and that's if either team scores a point, either team. The last 0-0 tie in the NFL was in like 1943, so this is a no-brainer. That's not going to happen again. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with the DraftKings daily fantasy sports contests, and DraftKings is giving all of their new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with just one deposit, and that could be your first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. You can use promo code THPN, THPN, the Hockey Podcast Network. Throw down $1 on any NFL game and win $100 in free bets. If either team scores a point, either team, you'd be 3-3, be 6-3. Doesn't matter. And again, that's promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook. And they are the official sports betting partner of the NFL. You must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only, new customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer and restrictions apply. You see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Pro.
Well, right, such there. A pro. Such a yeah. pro. Give me that cheddar, DraftKings. So, yo.
All right, trying to get that music festival money going.
Hell yeah, man. So, yo, let's jump right into it. The first question I have, and I've been begging, I've just been like chomping at the bit to ask you this. What was it like working with our homie from Papa Roach, man?
Oh, dude, Jacoby. Okay, so even before working with Jacoby in the Papa Roach guys, we did that tour with them in Europe. They invited us out on it because I think they had heard the band and they were into it. And those dudes, you know, there's always this I'm not sure the right word to use, but you know, you have to judge the kind of feel out the room, feel out the tour really when you first get there. Like, what is the vibe of this going to be? Like, we're the opener on this tour. Do these guys want to hang out? Do they want anything to do with us? Are we going to just stick to ourselves, get catering last, you know, all that stuff, which is totally cool, right? Like, we understand, like, there's bands that have been doing this a lot longer and they don't want to just be making new friends every 2 months, right? Papa Roach dudes are the coolest, most welcoming, like nicest dudes I think I've ever toured with in the industry. They are like awesome. So awesome as like, especially like taking out a band, like they treated us like so well, and their crew was great. Like, so that was just a great experience off the top. And I think, you know, Spencer had done that song with Hollywood Undead and Jacoby before, and they filmed a live music video on the tour, and you know, everyone just kind of like kept in touch, and like, you know, that it just felt kind of, man, I remember when we were talking about who would be the right fit for it, and it just seemed, when we watched the scene, it was like, that's gotta be Jacoby, like, that gets his head cut off.
Yeah.
With the video and everything, like, he crushed it, and you know, his vocals sound amazing on it. It was a great treat, honestly. And yeah, I see him around in LA all the time now. I'm just like, just the nicest guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, have whatever opinion you want about Papa Roach, but I mean, he is a talented musician and a talented vocalist now.
When he went into this,
do you know if he like, if he was like a fan at all, like of American Psycho, like, did that kind of like play into this at all, or was,
you know,
it just like,
I don't know, actually. I really don't know. I think it was, I mean, I would assume he is. That movie's awesome. Yeah. And we've talked about like horror movies and stuff with him, so I would imagine he was pretty stoked. The cool thing about like being in a band like ours, and being able to invite people to be part of the songs, is that the people coming to guest are already fans of what they're participating in before they even hear the song. Right. Mm-hmm. As if they're like into that genre, they're just stoked to be a part of it, which is exciting because you get to hear people like almost act a character when they're playing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, seeing Jacoby do it, like, you know, there's the spoken dialogue a little bit. And yeah, I don't know. He crushed it. We were so happy that he was able to jump in and do it. And the video performance that he did was amazing, too.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that video is just unbelievably cool. I mean, it's just like, you know, I love American Psycho. I think it's such a genius movie. Christian Bale in it is just like perfect. But like,
he's so good.
It's just like your take on it, and your little, like, you know, Huey Lewis in the News break, where you guys are just like kind of making fun of your own band. I just thought it was so cool, man. I think it's great. Now, so this Silver Scream 2, right? This is the first full length that your bass playing has been featured on, like, in full. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, this is the first one that's been all me. Yeah, I've had hands of writing on several past releases with the band, like here and there, just little bits. But this is the first one that from start to finish, I was involved in the entire process.
So kind of give me like a little bit of insight about that. So, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, that are you know, like Ice Nine Kills fans that maybe aren't like super fans are just under the impression that like, oh, it's Spencer and some guys, you know. So like, just like kind of give us some insight as to like, you know, the role in writing and everything that like that you play and the rest of the guys play, and how Spencer rounds it out.
So Spencer, it really is kind of, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due. Like, this is Spencer's like brainchild, and he has like crafted it to be exactly what he wants it to be. So, you know, as a supporting member of that, it's my job and all of our jobs to execute what he wants in the best way possible. Right.
Yeah.
Dude, so you need to talk to Tom. I've been trying to get him to do that for the longest time.
What?
With this podcast.
Just to execute everything that you want.
Yes.
No, because if we wanted to execute everything that you wanted, we would never be talking to Joe here, because Ice Nine Kills like has like too much detuned guitar, and you're like, nope, not pop punk enough. Next.
Dude, I am with you on that, though. But yeah, it's like, I don't even remember what we were talking about. What was the?
No, we were just talking about
just
how
writing, the writing.
Yeah, yeah. Writing the process. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not to say that, you know, every one of us don't enjoy what we bring to the table. Like, I get really excited about writing music is my favorite thing to do. More over performing, all of that. Yeah. Like, I love composing and writing and producing stuff specifically someone else's vision and like helping them bring it to life. So it's really exciting for me on this particular process. Like, even though COVID was a fucking nightmare, especially for the music industry, and it still is. If there's anything positive from it, it's that it put us in a place where all we could do was write. So
that's true.
That was part of my reason for the move out to LA was only about a week after our tour got canceled, like mid tour in Europe, that Papa Roach tour. I flew home and then moved out to LA because I knew that we were going to be writing. And we just holed up in my apartment. It was for the most part, me, Spencer, and Dan writing most of it. And Ricky and Patrick would send stuff in just because it was just location-based. And it was a lot of – the way we write is a lot of it's different, right, because it's based on movies. Mm-hmm. So it's pulling a lot from scores and dialogue and lines. And I kind of have viewed it now as like horror Weird Al.
I like that. That's a great description. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a totally new way and unique way of writing for me where it's not starting from the bare bones. It's taking something that already exists and putting it through a different lens in an exciting way, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
but yeah, working with it's a lot of picking away and making sure that we're staying true to the vision of the movie and not getting too carried away with, you know, the extra stuff. But yeah,
now do you feel like you guys are running out of like the big, like, blockbuster horror movies to do?
Every time we start having that conversation, we start listing them, and there are just so many that I'm not going to list them now because not everyone knows what the songs on this new album are, but there are so many movies that we haven't touched, and it's surprising that we haven't touched them, honestly. So, I'm not worried at all. And then, I feel like there's new ones constantly building. Like there's even like, you know, the Conjuring franchise is new. Right. And there's so many like layers to that, even Annabelle and all that stuff. There's plenty. Not super worried. I do want to do an Adam Sandler EP though, if we ever run out, like a pop punk ska Adam Sandler EP.
I love that. And then I was just thinking to myself, like, you could probably write an entire concept record just about The Room. Like just about The Room.
Oh my
God. You could take that one movie,
dude,
and you could literally write an entire, probably like a double LP about it. You definitely could.
It's funny that you say that because Spencer is like a massive fan of that. Mm-hmm. Like he's gone and met Tommy Wiseau several times.
Oh yeah. So
I'm sure he would be thrilled with it.
Man, in New York City, man, he has like essentially like a, I guess you'd call it like a, I don't know, what do they call it when like you have like 6 months on like a cruise ship? I forget what they call that. It's like a
residency.
A residency. He's got like a residency of this one theater in New York City where like they do like a room screening every month and he does like a Q&A after it. And it's become this like cult following where like people ask him the same questions because he has like the same responses. Like, so apparently like over like 2 years, one guy who goes to every single one of these room screenings has just been like, Tommy, why do you wear 3 belts? And like, it's like this lore. Like, have you ever seen him like in like some of the scenes of the movie?
I love it.
He's wearing three belts. Like they're not connected. They're just 3 belts. And his like answer is just like, oh, because 2 and 3 is better than 2. And like, that's it. And like, it's just like, I think it's great that, you know, the mockumentary came out with all of the, it's, you know, so Franco and all that stuff, because if you didn't know about The Room before, like now they got so many eyes on it. What an interesting thing. So if you guys ever did put out a record around The Room, I would absolutely be all about it. So I just kind of have a little bit of you know, information I'd love to get about you guys working with Wizard Blood. So I know he's got such a diverse, like music kind of like repertoire that he's worked on. I mean, he's worked with like, you know, a lot of different like post-hardcore bands and metalcore bands, and you know, like Motionless in White and Dance Gavin Dance. And I know he's worked with like Beartooth and As I Lay Dying, but he's also worked with, you know, Lil Wayne and Lil Jon and Nothing Nowhere and like all this kind of stuff. So like, what was it like, you know, working with him for the past two records? Like what kind of perspective did he bring into the production of those last two records, this new one and the last one?
Drew is like so valuable, like as a producer. Mm-hmm. He's I mean, even in I think about everything like when I'm songwriting from like a pop aspect where
sure.
I it's all about the hooks for me, whether they're heavy or breakdowny or whatever, like
yep. there's
gotta be a hooky element that's singable or whatever, right? Drew is like the master behind that, where if you could be like, oh, we need something that's gonna appeal to this age group at this time of year, he'll just be like, oh yeah, like this kind of melody and this chord progression, it's just mm-hmm. perfect, right? Like he's just yeah. that kind of dude. And like we worked with the way this album was recorded was over the entire course of this pandemic. It wasn't like we were just in the studio for a month. It was mm-hmm. 3 days this week, 2 weeks off, 2 weeks in the studio straight, a month off, right? Like, so we yeah. had time to sit with it and he had time to sit with it, and we'd come back into the studio and he'd have all sorts of like cool things to show us that we wouldn't have thought of. And part of it, I do think, is because he works with so many different types of music and like the pop and the trap world and like so much different shit that he brings a lot of those elements to us. And
yeah.
I don't know if it's as obvious when you listen to it, but maybe now that like you hear, like we talked about it, you can go in and kind of like pick out like different things that are, I don't want to say unique to certain genres or whatever, but maybe not just, you know, in the norm of like a metalcore album, you know, like he's just sure. got a very, very unique ear and cool way of looking at things. And he's an amazing writer. Like he had a very large part of writing a lot of these songs.
It's awesome.
Now, yeah, Joe, I do want to just jump a little bit forward. You guys have your album release in a couple of days and it's a Boston show. So, you know, the other guys in the band aren't necessarily from Boston area, but you personally are, and Spencer is as well. So like, how excited are you to get that experience of playing a record release show in your hometown?
Yeah. So this is definitely cool. You know, what's really fun about the way we kind of do things is we, before tours, we practice in my parents' basement. That's actually why I'm here right now. And we don't That's awesome. Have to do that at all. Like we are at a level where we could go rent out a space or whatever, but it's just fun. Like this is what we grew up doing. Just growing up in the Northeast, everyone played in basements, shows, practices, whatever. So it's just kind of fun to do that and bother my parents and have them cook us dinner and stuff. But so we're back here a lot. So this has become like the home base. So everyone's pretty stoked on doing the show. What I'm really excited about is this is like a pretty small venue for us. We haven't played a room this size in a few years, actually since I joined the band, I think. So we announced the show yesterday and I think it's sold out. So I'm pretty stoked and it should be crazy. It's at this place called Sonia, which is like, I think it's like an eighth of the size of a place that we usually play or something. Should be pretty sick. I'm pretty now,
is there a reason why you guys picked that's like, are you trying to do a smaller intimate tour, or are you just like wanted to check this off your list?
I think this was more so just something that was kind of unique and fun for people that were able to make it. Like this isn't a show where it's not part of a tour. Like all the, I don't know if you've looked at our dates that we just played in the summer and these ones coming up, but they're all in what we would call like secondary or tertiary markets, like not necessarily mm-hmm. like the big cities. So yeah. us doing this underplay kind of show in Boston doesn't rule out a big show there in the future on a future tour, right? So there's part strategy to it, but more so, you know, all of these bands love doing this kind of shit, like super intimate, no barrier, up close, like last minute. It's just exciting. It gets the fans excited that they're seeing something like unique and special. And the fact, even like the exclusivity of announcing it closer to the date makes it, I mean, it makes it more fun for me too. Not even just fans and stuff, you know, it's just the excitement around the whole thing, I guess.
Now, have you guys done like a Salem show before? Like actually in Salem?
That'd be cool.
I mean, we definitely have, before I was in the band, just as like a local band, way back.
No, yeah, yeah.
There's no real venues in Salem, which hopefully changes. They do like some outdoor stuff every now and then, but I'd love to. It would be awesome. I'd even love to just do like a VFW show, do the same kind of thing in Salem. I think it would be really fun, but hopefully soon. Hopefully, we do have like a some events that are, I think by the time this comes out, they'll be announced. If not, sneak peek. We have like some things happening in Salem over the course of the month and everything. So, well, we love to be there, and it is kind of like our home. So, yeah, we're there as much as we can.
Now, yeah. you like grew up pretty close to Salem, or like actually in Salem?
I grew up about 20 minutes from Salem, but I lived in Salem for 8 years. And I plan on, you know, later on in life at some point moving back, or if not in the area.
So I guess since we're like right around Halloween, like I've never personally been there during Halloween time, but like when you live there, where you were like, God, I just want Halloween to be over already.
You know, most people that live there, I think, say that. I kind of love it. I'm not even like a huge, like, I like Halloween, but I'm not like one of those people that like campaigns for Halloween all year and posts the like first day of October meme or whatever. I'm definitely not that dude, but I'm like, I never really get in my car and go anywhere unless I absolutely have to. And the thing that's nice about Salem is everything is walking distance. You can get everything you need. So it doesn't bother the traffic. If I had to commute, it would drive me fucking crazy. But I like all the like events that happen. There's like guest speakers that come. There's musicians that come. The museum does like cool exhibits. There's all sorts of like unique vendors. So I love it, but most of my friends fucking hate it. But I also think that's like kind of a rule of living in a tourist town, is you're supposed to hate the tourists. It's just been established by like every 80s and 90s movie that's just a baseline rule.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, and I think like a lot of other tourist towns are that way. I mean, like I live in Orlando, which is like kind of a tourist town. And I mean, kind of, you know, okay. Yeah. So it's a tourist town.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's just one of those things where it's just like, you know, it can definitely get annoying, but you also kind of, you do understand the appeal, right?
Yeah.
On the note of the Salem stuff, are you, I'm sure you are. Are you familiar with the band Murder by Death?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So
my old band actually played shows with them all the time.
So like, you know, Murder by Death does those Stanley Hotel shows in Colorado with all of like the, you know, the kind of spookiness and stuff. And they've been doing that for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think kind of fits their mystique, which is kind of really cool. So like, yeah, I mean, you know,
one there too.
Oh, did you? Oh, yeah, I had no idea. That's awesome.
A special like acoustic. We actually, it was in the middle of a tour, and we made like an exclusive event that a bunch of people had to win tickets to and stuff. And it was awesome. Like that was such a cool experience. And it was actually cool for me because Dumb and Dumber was also filmed there. And I didn't know that until we were like driving up. So there was a lot more to see, and they put us up there. It was great. It was very cool. We try to do a lot of stuff as much as we can like that. Like we played, actually, this was even before I was in the band, but I was playing this event, was at the Scream House where all the murders happened in Scream. Like we've done stuff there.
That's awesome.
There's like some blood. There's like a, God, they're going to kill me for not remembering the name, but there's a place in LA that's like a vintage video rental kind of museum that we always do stuff at, you know. So we'll do it. We try to do as much as we can, especially with the horror community, to support, you know, even other businesses and people like campaigning for that stuff.
Dude, and so one other question I'm just kind of curious about. Tell me about how you guys were able to hook Gage Creed, man. That's like super cool. Miko Hughes, right? That was in the, you know, the original Pet Sematary. So, how did that work out for you guys for that video?
I honestly don't know, dude. Spencer like has this, he's become almost like his own, I don't know how you would what he is, where he's like this kind of like icon in the metalcore world that has intertwined himself with the horror community to a point where he's now also considered like that type of like, I don't know what you call that level of celebrity where they're doing those campy horror films, but he's like in that circuit, right? With all these people. So he knows everyone. Like he's always telling me, oh, I talked to this guy that was in Scream and this guy that was in Freddy. And it's crazy. And obviously, you know, when the actors find out about what we're doing, they think it's awesome because we're singing about shit that they were part of. Right. So, and you know, working with even like Bill Moseley is the lead detective in all of our videos and him being in House of a Thousand Corpses and all that shit. Right. Like he's like part of our crew now and like talks about us without being asked, you know, it's really kind of surreal and awesome to be accepted in that way in that world. But yeah, Spencer just kind of makes it happen just with his like energy around the band. It's crazy.
So sick. That's so sick. I mean, that's such a cool thing. I mean, but you kind of got to like figure that like as you guys are further more and more establishing like your presence as being this kind of, you know, a band that could stand out on its own, you know, with the kind of music that you guys write, but because of your connection to horror, it's like you guys open up like the possibility, like imagine like, you know, next year, like Universal just reaches out to you and they're like, hey, you know, we want you guys to do like 6 weeks for Halloween Horror Nights. And we're going to pay you guys like $500,000 to just do this.
Yeah. We've talked about like, that's the dream is like Spencer has brought up ideas of buying out old movie theaters and turning it into like a haunted attraction or, you know, all that kind of stuff is totally on the table for what we're doing. Obviously, you know, a lot of those things are bigger ideas than
sure,
you know, practicality allows, but yeah, you're right. Like just being connected in that way to something that's bigger than just the songs that we're writing or even the music community that we're in, like, We have fans that aren't metal fans that come because they found us through the movies, right?
Yeah.
So it's definitely unique. I think it's something that not even, you know, anyone involved in the band before I was involved predicted would happen at the level it's happened. But dude, horror fans are rabid, loyal fans. Like they love what they love, you know?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I was in like an absolutely mediocre, like middle of the road, mediocre band that just like played wrestling themes. Like our gimmick was that we played the entrance themes that wrestlers walked down the aisles to. And honestly, we weren't great. Like we were sloppy and we were kind of crass and all this stuff. But I mean, like, I think like the biggest show that we had with like minimal production value, minimal anything, like we had like 300 people show up.
And that's amazing.
And none of them were like metal fans or punk fans or alternative fans. I mean, they were in like the crossing of all these wires, but like they came just because like they could hear Stone Cold's theme music and they came just because it's part they of could the, hear Hulk the, Hogan's the theme music, right? Everything. So it's like, you know, that's such a cool thing about having layers to what you do because like, again, not to blow smoke up your ass, but like, even if you didn't have these parallels and all these strings to like horror music and stuff, like Ice Nine Kills would stand on its laurels alone because you guys write kick-ass stuff. Like you just write great music.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. Hey, you're very welcome. But because you have that extra layer, like you just have all this like built-in fandom that like people who may not, just like you're saying, may not be metal fans, all of a sudden are like, man, like I really like the whole ethos of Ice Nine Kills, but like, I'm really starting to dig their music. Like what else could I get into that kind of sounds like this? And all of a sudden now they're checking out, you know, Sleeping with Sirens or Under Oath or like any of these other bands that are in that space. And all of a sudden now you're connecting more fans to your industry parallels.
Right.
You know, and well, you know what else alternative is cool music, is
it actually,
know?
It works both ways too. It's like, you know, without us being involved so heavily in the horror community and in the movie stuff, we might get sucked into, not that, you know, bands do this and they have success and it's awesome, but we would be playing metalcore tours and that's about it, right? Yep. But we can go out with a band like, I mean, a band like Papa Roach, I don't know if they would have looked at us otherwise in the same way, right? Like, because there was something that was added on to the breakdowns and riffs, you know, there's like another level of artistry in it. So it's just something different and hopefully refreshing for people. I know some people definitely don't find it refreshing, but yeah, I think, you know, having that, that thing that makes it stand out helps in a lot of ways.
Listen, man, I've come across plenty of people who tell me that the Beatles are terrible, you know? So like, every entity will have its critics, but
people are allowed to not like whatever they don't want to like.
But I love what you guys are doing. I think it's great. We've been at it for about an hour. I'll throw it to Mikey to see if he has like a little final question, because you know, Mikey.
I have a real important question.
Here we go.
Because I know that Joe is also vegan. Tell me about your tofu scramble game.
Woo! Oh, bro. Are you a tofu scramble guy?
Oh, hell yeah. Dude, I have it at least once a week.
We'll have to go head to head. I'm pretty confident in mine. I have a few different recipes and styles I can do now.
You know what's crazy, though? Like, before I became vegan, even before I became vegetarian, like, I wasn't really a big egg person. Like, I didn't really,
See,
eggs.
I was every day. I loved eggs.
But no joke, I can eat tofu scramble, like, every day. I think it's so good, like, the way I make
it's
it.
It's so addicting.
Yeah. And all right, it's funny, because I'm not, like, an egg person.
So, I mean, tell the world how you make it. Like, you're going to be like, oh, I make it so good, and then not tell everyone. Tell us how you make it.
So, my favorite one, I do, like, a Tex-Mex kind of one with a lot of, like, cumin and garlic powder. And I make, like, the sauce separate, the seasoning into, like, a sauce instead of just dumping the sauces on it. Always, big key, press your tofu, freeze it, thaw it, press it again, freeze it. I do it twice every time, and then cut it. It makes a huge difference. It's a pain in the ass, so I don't do it as often as I would like to, but I try to, as soon as I buy it, start doing that freezing process. Cook all the liquid out, and then you use the liquid from the sauce, which is all those spices mixed together. It's like paprika, cumin, salt, pepper, garlic powder, hot chili, and... and black salt. Mix all that together. Yeah. And it's fucking awesome. And then any veggies I have lying around, I just throw in.
Dude, I've been adding turmeric and nutritional yeast.
Oh, right, duh. Obviously turmeric. That has to be in there.
Yeah. And, dude, the nutritional yeast and turmeric together is just so damn good.
I can't get into the nutritional yeast. My girlfriend loves it.
And, dude, I put that on popcorn. I could put it, like, I use it, like, as my sprinkled cheese on pasta.
But we were talking about this the other day. Like, when didn't you say that, like, you weren't really a cheese guy, Mikey?
I'm not really a cheese guy at all.
So that's so funny to me that, like, you, like, because I,
well, maybe that's
all the times I've had nutritional yeast, like, I think it tastes like cheese, you know?
I can see, I can see how people say it tastes like cheese, but it's not. Dude, I'm the first vegan to say it. Like, I just don't think, unless you're paying a lot of money, that there's really that great of vegan cheese. It just doesn't compare.
No, I hate it.
Right?
I hate vegan cheese.
Yeah, it's just – I mean, there is really good vegan cheese, but it is expensive. So I just try to I just don't eat cheese that much anymore. So even that stuff –
I've heard everyone talks about, like Daiya being a good brand for vegan cheese. But I've also heard that stuff is kind of
there's
expensive.
The new one. What's it? Mykonos?
It just depends on what it's on. Yeah, Mykonos is good. If it's like a main part of a dish, it's never as good. Yeah, if it's like in a sandwich, totally fine. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't like melted vegan cheese. It just,
exactly.
When it melts,
it like sticks to your mouth.
It sticks and it's like snot. And I just hate it.
Just
so gross.
Shit talking vegan.
That is so. But But I'll tell you what, man. You know, like obviously, I'm not a vegan nor am I vegetarian, but I love vegetables, man. Like I really can honestly say, like, you know, like give me like a plate, like, and I mean like a whole ass plate of like grilled peppers, onions, like blistered tomatoes, like mushrooms.
See, I'm actually like the opposite. Oh, I like
really
vegetables. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm not like, I'm kind of a junky vegan food guy. And, okay. and I yeah. just, what I tell myself, the lie I tell myself is that it's healthier because it's vegan, but it's just, I eat just like, you know, just the same shit I used to, just the vegan versions of it. Like the fried chicken shit is all awesome. It's so good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing, you know, I definitely eat healthier just because there's options places that are healthy, but
oh, of course. Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you should, Mikey, you got me that veggie burger at that place. It was incredible.
Oh yeah. At that brewery. I don't know if it's vegan because before, you know, that this is now almost 3 years ago.
Yeah. I was vegetarian.
I was just vegetarian at the time. So yeah, I don't know if that too. Necessarily would be vegan. I would have to check. I haven't been back there yet.
That was really good. But
yeah, there's a lot of good spots in Charlotte. Next time you're in town, we'll have to hit up some. There are actually
a lot.
There's a lot of good vegan food trucks in Charlotte right now.
Ooh, down. Trucks. Let's go.
Yeah.
Down.
Hell yeah, man. So, yo, Joe, man, I am very, very pumped that I finally got to get on an interview with you, man. I've been waiting for this for a while, and it did not disappoint. You're a great guest to have, man. I appreciate you indulging us and answering all of our stupid questions and talking a little bit of Bees hockey. I'm like I said, as this season progresses, man, I'm super pumped. I'm really hoping that we have a really, really competitive division and conference. Yeah. I'm hoping that
I'm sure we'll be chatting quite a bit over the course of the season. We're playing each other enough.
Hell yeah. But like we said, October 15th, the Silver Screen 2 comes out, which like I said, when this episode drops, it'll already be out. But we wish you all the best for the record. I know you guys spent a really, really long time cultivating it. All the videos that you guys have put out for it have been great. I hope the shows, around the tour that you guys are doing are awesome. And I hope the record sells the bejesus out of stuff. And we see you guys on Heat Seeker charts, man. Cause like I said, for us, and I know it's the same for you, but Mikey and I, we've grown up listening to this kind of music. So whenever we get the opportunity to see, this important type of music for us be prolific and important, is just awesome. And it couldn't happen to better people. So,
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you get an opportunity
to get Spencer on to tell his story about how Corey Schneider got pulled from his game and he replaced him and won the game.
I would love that. And if anything,
Corey Schneider's with the Islanders.
If anything else,
Spencer played on a team with him in like middle school or high school.
Really, just want to get Spencer on the pod just so I can spend like 40 minutes trying to pitch him this idea of like your next record just being like an entire room retrospective. Like, I think I could try to talk him into it. I'll just be like, man, you have one record that'll, just have like a whole like sweetest
easy sell.
Yeah,
easy sell for him.
You have a song about Lisa. You have a song about Chris R. You have a song about Denny. Like, it's just, it's so easy.
I just want to do
so
scene
easy
by scene. Like, I would love to write a song for that sex scene.
Oh God. Oh, so gross, man. Tommy, that's one thing that if I never have to see that man's white paste the ass again.
Oh my God.
I'm okay with it. I'm totally okay with it. Joe, dude, thank you so much for being on here with us. Go grab the Silver Screen 2. Go check out all the music videos, wherever you like to listen to your music. And then I guess real quick, not that I anticipate people don't know where to find you, but if you want to take a quick couple of seconds just to drop socials and stuff, just so anyone who might not be familiar with Ice Nine Kills can go find you guys and check you guys out.
Yeah, I think everything we have is now at Ice Nine Kills, like actually written out. You can find me at my Instagram is where I'm most active, JOEOQT, for all like songwriting or whatever stuff people want to chat that, and production stuff. But yeah, that's where you can find me in the band. And then October 15th, it's out. We head out on tour in November. There's still tickets available at some of the shows, so get them quick. and then more stuff announced soon.
Hell yeah. Well, Joe, always great catching up. Definitely, we're going to hit up some vegan food trucks when you're in town.
Hell yeah. And absolutely.
We'll just continue to shoot the shit over Islanders and Bruins throughout the season, man.
Absolutely.
Sounds good. Thank you guys for having me. Congratulations on all your success with this. It's been awesome. Oh,
thank you so much, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks, brother.
All right, guys.
Have a great one.
See ya.
We'll talk soon. See ya.
Sections, a killer complexion is often a great alibi. Valentino couture mixed with violence and gore.
Well, I guess I'm a pretty sick guy.
With my beauty routines and a fridge full of spleen.
You might say it's extreme,
but it's time to say goodbye. So to hell with good intentions. So to hell.
Just leaving.
But why?
I have to return some videotapes.
You'll find no escape once you're captured on tape. I'm aware it's a bit avant-garde.
It's a piece of
trash. Casually dreaming without ever grieving. But wait, let me give you my card. That's all. There is no real me, just this dark entity that cannot be redeemed. So it's hard to say goodbye. So to hell with good intentions. So to hell. Kills.
Not really.
Their early work was a little bit too seen for me, but when the Silver Screen came out, I think they really came into their own, commercially and artistically. The whole album has a refined melodic sensibility that really makes it a cut above the rest. Hey, Paul!
Right out of a Hollywood horror movie.
Nine that a mountain of evidence
was silence, man.